Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Now it's time for Question Mark. Get your questions in for Mark Schlereth right now. It's sponsored by Brakes Plus. RamosLaw.com text line is 303-713-1043. That's 303-713-1043. If you got a question for Stink, use the hashtag Question Mark. Randy wants to know, wait a second, guys, you said Philip Lindsay doesn't need to play much in the preseason. I disagree. How much Philip Lindsay do we need to see in the preseason?
Well, okay, so why does he disagree? Like, what is it that's going to be different?
How much is the acceptable level of Philip Lindsay in the preseason? Is it a game? You know, and obviously week four, it's their week three. You know, we'll talk about a half.
Yeah.
Is a half of Philip Lindsay okay? Is a quarter? Is a drive? Is one snap? Like, what's the acceptable level
to
go, okay, I feel good about Philip Lindsay?
Here's where I would disagree with the texture. Is like, if Philip Lindsay is practicing and he's getting those reps in practice and he's doing all the things in practice, then I don't think he needs a lot of time in the preseason. I think he probably needs, you know, a couple quarters of football in the preseason. You know, he is not a rookie. He played a ton last year. Now, here's the point being that you're putting in a new offense. You need that practice time. You need to understand, you know, what those calls are. You need to understand kind of the nuance of what we're trying to accomplish, what we're trying to get done, in this offense that Rich will run. I'm assuming he's going to run it just like, you know, Kyle Shanahan does. They have, they're really running a two play, kind of a check with me offense is what they're running. And so they have a canet perspective. They call it canet. So they have a canet perspective. So they'll call a play, and if they get the look, it's call it and run it. So, hey man, let's say we want to run strong to a bubble, meaning the guard is uncovered. That's what we want to do. And we line up, and they're in an under front, so there's a bubble on the front side, on the strong side. That's just blue 80 is hot. They're gonna run it. If they see that it's a reduction on that side, so it's an over defense essentially, then they'll say can it, and you know they'll have some type of motion that designates whether it's man or zone, which you know they run. So when you watch this offense, one of the things it'll be interesting. Watch this offense. Remember the Peyton Manning days where Peyton sat around and waited till the clock got to 10?
Right.
And then he started hand signaling, gesturing, and then making a call. They will be at the ball with the quarterback under center, or the quarterback making calls with about 14, 15 seconds on the clock, on the play clock. Because they want to get, when does the quarterback communication go out of the ear?
15.
At 15. So, they literally, you watch Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan talks to his quarterback all the way up until the clock goes off. So you watch what goes on. So they'll be on the ball with 20, 22 seconds left, and they'll start the play call so that the coach can talk through, like, what's going on. At least that's what Kyle does. But they'll have a canet perspective, like a two-call situation where they're running. Now there's still some call it run it plays where you just get up and we just want to run it, you know. But that's how this offense operates. And here's what I love about that. You're dialed in the rest of the 11, you know, so, or the rest of the 10. So like you see what Peyton was able to do, and Peyton was great at what he does. But you in a lot of situations are waiting to kind of hear what he wants to call. When you have a canet perspective, you know that we're running this. If not, we're checking to this, right?
It's either or.
Either or. And so you get to read the same thing the quarterback reads. Like everybody's kind of a little quarterback, like a mini quarterback. So you're reading that bubble look, or you're reading safety rotation, or you're reading, you know, you're reading the same thing that the quarterback is looking at. So all 10 guys are clued into the same indicators. And it makes it easier, like for me as a receiver or for me as an offensive lineman or for me as a fullback, it makes it easier because I walk up and go, oh, I know what we're going to run. And now I can adjust my stance or I can clue myself into the issues, right? Because there's always issues on every play that you have to think about. So now all of a sudden I'm like, oh, okay, we're not running it here. So let me get in a little bit more pass happy stance, right? Because I know we're not going to run it. And then all of a sudden, let me look at my clues, right? I've got this guy, but I gotta be alert. If I get a mic back or walked up in the A gap, I gotta hard call that thing. And I gotta work in tandem with my running back, right? So you're already clued in as opposed to you just waiting there thinking, hey, we're gonna run it. All of a sudden, blue 80, you know, check, boom. And then you change it.
Right.
You just don't have as much time to run through that stuff in your head while you're sitting in your stance. So I personally like it. I think it's good that way. So getting back to Phillip Lindsay, he's the guy, you know, you need to practice so that you can run all those things. But as far as the game stuff is concerned, I don't think you need four preseason games. We got to make sure you're right. I don't think he needs that.
What if he doesn't play at all in the preseason? That, just keep him healthy. He's right. Ready to go. We've seen him practice every single day. He's looked amazing, but he plays zero preseason snaps. Are you okay?
I wouldn't be concerned.
No concern.
No, I wouldn't be concerned. And I think he'd have, I think there would be a rotation there. You know, he probably wouldn't start. It'd probably be Freeman that gets to start, but he'd be a huge impact player. And you know, you start to think about the wear and tear he took. I mean, the guy's 190 pounds, you know? The wear and tear he took on his body, even though he's a tough inside runner and he won't shy away from contact, he's afraid of nothing. Is there a better role for him? Is there a more dynamic role where you're going to have his freshest? Like, I would venture to guess in his last couple of games, his yards per carry started to creep downward and, like, is there a way to keep him fresher over the course of the season and have him still make a bunch of dynamic plays, especially in the passing game?
Well, and how about using him more as a receiver out of the backfield? Because I've talked to, let me just say, people in the know that told me Case Keenum didn't see him. Case Keenum couldn't see Phillip Lindsay as a receiver out of the backfield. That will be zero problem for Joe Flacco.
Why? Because he wasn't looking for him. Because
he's not tall enough.
He's not tall enough, and
we know Joe Flacco's tall,
right?
So just that alone, does that mean, hey, we're going to see Lindsay more as a receiver?
Right. I think I also wonder if Lindsay was, you know, like there will be in this offense some design, like. If Lindsay's just your check down guy as opposed to a guy you design some dump offs to, like, right. You want to watch great screen game. You want to watch the best screen film you will ever watch and the best get the ball to running backs in space film. Go watch Kansas City Chiefs. Go watch Andy Reid design bubble screens and fake bubble screens with a swing on the outside to the other running. Like, he's amazing with his screen design. There is, I don't think there's anybody better in the league at designing those. And they're chunk plays, Cecil. I mean, just gets huge chunk yardage out of those plays. So I would love to see that.
By the way, Phillip Lindsay's numbers did go down in the final stretch of the season. First eight games, 5.7 a carry. Last seven games, 5.1 a carry.
Not much.
Remarkable.
Yeah,
it did go down, but it's still remarkable what he does. And by the way, I mean, he's 190 now.
Right.
What is he at the end of the year?
Yeah.
180? 185?
Yeah, 179.
Can we throw a niner in there?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I just think there's a point for a guy like that of diminishing returns when it comes. And guys, I mean, I'm just telling you, to me, and coaches in today's game, what do coaches tell you today? Like, look at the Patriots. Look at what we've done here recently. They'll tell you those joint practices and scrimmages are way better than the preseason games. Way better. So you just kind of understand understand the way the preseason has gone here. It's not like when I was playing. It's different than it was.
It is question mark. Use the hashtag question mark on social media and the RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. That's 303-713-1043. Get your question in for Stink, just like Pat did here. Guys, this offense sounds great on script, but are they built to come from behind?
Well,
because we were talking about Joe Flacco staying on script and the play action, and he's going to have 10 completions, and then he's got to get another 10 out of those extra 20. What if they're playing from behind? Now, they shouldn't be with this defense, but I think Pat brings up a great point. What if they got to sling it more? What if instead of throwing it 30 times, he's got to throw it 50 times?
Right, there's only one quarterback in history that's got a winning record when he throws it 50-plus times a game. Do you know that?
Brees?
No.
Not Drew Brees.
No. Only one quarterback in the history of the league that has a winning record with 50 or more attempts.
Who is it?
Tom Brady.
I love Tom Brady!
I love that guy.
It's your guy.
But, I mean, nobody is, like, everybody thinks, well, we need this slinging offense and this. There's nobody that throws it, other than Brady, there's nobody that throws it 50-plus times a game that has a winning record. It's just not a recipe for winning. Can you drop back and can you sling it around? Does he have the ability to do that? Absolutely. Are you going to win a lot of games that way? No. So I look at that question like, well, what if? Well, like, you can make some comebacks and you can do some of those things. There's like, yeah, this offense has the ability to just go straight drop back and you know, try to run some smash concepts and see if you can get one-on-one with the safety. And, yeah, you've got, depending on the defense, can you do that? Absolutely you can do that. Can you run verticals and, you know, can you run four verticals against cover three and try to put the safety in a bind and catch a seam? Yeah, absolutely. You can, you know, all those things. Can you do them? Yeah, sure, certainly. Every offense has that in there, but it's not a recipe for long-term success. So, yeah, it sounds great when we stay on script. Yeah. So let's stay on script. I mean, let's run the heck out of the ball and let's set up our play action and let's do those things because that's what has to happen. And there, like I said, there's very few offenses. Again, I just told you there's one quarterback. Think about the history of this league. Joe Montana, John Elway, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Matthew Stafford. Ben Roethlisberger. You fill in the blank. There is one dude in the history of this league that has a winning record when he's thrown it 50-plus times a game. One. In the history of the league. And that's Brady. It's not a recipe. It's not a consistent winning recipe. You throw it 50 times a game, you lose.
Is there anything to say about the comfort or confidence this team would have in that mode? What did you guys do? Did you have confidence when, okay, we're up against it, Elway, you got to get it done.
Yeah, because
because
we had Elway, you know. I mean, you're just like, we'll be all right. And part of that, too, you know, and Brady certainly doesn't have this, but Elway had the ability to extend plays. I shouldn't say that Brady doesn't have the ability to extend plays.
He does it in a different way. He, like, climbs the pocket and kind of glides a little bit.
Right. He's a guy that just has great pocket presence and awareness and can slide around in the pocket to buy himself a little bit of time. You know, not a ton, but a little bit of time to complete a ball. So that's where he's at, which is, you know, and Elway, you just had confidence that Elway's just going to, I mean, he's going to scramble around, buy himself some time, then chuck one 60 yards down the field on a, you know, just on a rope.
Right.
So, anyhow.
It is question mark. RamosLaw.com text line 303-713-1043. Use the hashtag question mark on social media and our text line to get your question through to Stink. Joe chimes in. Going back to an earlier conversation, guys, who do they fill in if Connor McGovern struggles? They've got an answer if Leary gets hurt. They've got an answer if Garrett Bowles stinks up the joint and has to be replaced at left tackle. They have an answer everywhere except for center. It has to be Connor McGovern, right?
Well, he's their starter. What do they have as far as backups are concerned?
Not a lot. Like, I wrote up the centers for our website, and it's like, it's kind of Connor McGovern or bust, really. At that position, you could move some guys around.
Well, all right, so you got McGovern, you got Sam Jones, who was a rookie last year, who had a back injury, right?
Okay, right.
So, has Don Barclay ever played center?
Not well.
Well.
Like, you're right there, though.
Right.
Leary gets hurt and Eli Wilkinson has to play right guard, I actually think that might even be an upgrade. You know what I mean? Like, Eli Wilkinson's really good.
Mm-hmm.
If Juwan James have to go left tackle over Garrett Bowles because Bowles is struggling, like, that'll actually be an upgrade. But if you have to go to a backup center.
Right.
Doesn't Connor McGovern have to get it this year? Like, all the way through, be a solid player, not just a guy. Can they afford him to be just a guy?
No, he's got to be solid. Although, you know, I mean, you know, you probably have arguments about this. I thought he's a better center than he was a guard. And just having guys right on top of you. I mean, I guess my thing about Connor watching him play at times for a guy that's, you know, noted as this weight room, you know, guru, like super strong guy, he doesn't always feel like he plays that way. Like, it doesn't always necessarily transfer from the field or from the weight room to the field.
Right.
I'm not talking about in-depth breakdowns on the guy. You know, I sat there and studied every snap of his, but I feel that way too many times. But I thought he played a little stronger at center. And maybe he gets off balance. Maybe he's a real strong guy, but he gets off balance with that space that you have between guard when you're playing guard and you're running against a defensive tackle. Whereas if you're playing a guy that's a one shade or a zero shade, you know, a guy that's right on top of you. So one shade would be on either eye, you know, inside or outside eye or at the center position. And then, you know, zero is just head up on you. Because now you're just grabbing right there. You don't have. There's almost not enough space to get off balance. Do you know what I mean? And so I thought he played a little stronger at center than he did at guard in the times I watched him play. But I still thought that there's a room for improvement. And, you know, maybe the balance thing is a big thing that Mike Munchak can help him with, because Munchak, you know, for those of you who didn't get to watch Munchak, like, I was a young player when I came in the league, and those are... You watched Bruce Matthews. You studied Mike Munchak. You, like, those are the guys you're like, hey, man, I'm playing against a really good D tackle. Give me some Munchak film. Like, I want to watch how he set his guy. I want to see how he played his guy. Give me some Bruce Matthews stuff. Like, there are certain guys that I would watch when I had to play a really good player and say, man, I got to play, you know, John Randall, or I got to play Warren Sapp, or I got to play, you know, back in the day.
Cortez Kennedy.
Right, whatever. Let me see how Munchak played him. Let me see how Bruce played him. Let me see how Steve Wisniewski played him. Let me see how, you know, how these, never Randall McDaniel, because that hockey stick leg, like, I couldn't watch it. Randall McDaniel could do things, by the way, like, Randall McDaniel could do things that are not of this world. Like, his technique was horrible. And he was so gifted as an athlete. You know, like, I'll give you two Randall McDaniel stories from guys that played with him in Minnesota. So, one, there's not one guy on the team, not a receiver, not a running back, not anybody that could beat him in a 10-yard sprint. Fastest 10-yard sprint on the team. So, I mean, just an absolute freak show.
At 300-something pounds.
He always played about 280.
280?
Yeah, okay. But just lean 280. Strong. Randall McDaniel could also take 245-pound plates from the weight room, turn them face-to-face so there's no lip on them, squeeze them between his fingers, and carry them around the weight room. Like, that's impossible. So, my buddy Marvin Washington, who played here in Denver... They had this traveling circuit back when I was playing in the off season of these charity hoop games. And there's a bunch of NFL players that would travel around and play, you know, and play for charity. And they'd fill up, you know, high school gymnasiums or whatever. And it was all a big charity thing. And the guys got, you know, the guys got paid to go do it, but they'd raise a lot of money for charity. And so Marvin Washington, who was playing with the Jets at the time, he was my college teammate at Idaho, and I was with the Skins. They were right down the road in Bethesda, Maryland or something playing this game. And so he calls me and says, hey, man, we're going to play this game. Come, you know, come check it out. You and Lisa come, you know, bring the kids or whatever and come check it out. So we did. And they're playing up and down. And Randall McDaniels posted. Now he's, you know, Randall's 6'3", 6'4". And he's posted up, down low, and they throw a ball into him. He takes one dribble, goes up, double hand, almost broke the backboard, just double hand slams. Yeah! I mean, he's like, his head is at the rim when he slams it. And no step to it. He just rotated and, I mean, just went up over the top of somebody and just hammered it. And I'm like, that dude is cut from a different cloth. Like, he was, the guy was a complete and total freak. Absolute freak show.
So don't watch any of him on film. But by the way,
you can't.
The charity basketball tournament guys didn't call you? They were like, hey, Stink, we need you to play some hoops.
No, I never got that invite. I did not get that invite.
Never. Marvin couldn't pull any strings for you there? And hey, my buddy Stink, he's got a 2-inch vertical. You'd love his game.
I had a good, I could dunk. I had a good vertical, but I could dunk at 300. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, sure, yeah. I couldn't jump over a sheet of paper right now, but I had 38-inch vertical coming out of high school.
Why were you so down on your legs? You're still, to this day, so down on your legs.
My legs are skinny. They're strong, but they're skinny little things. That's why my knees just kept giving out. Early in my career, I could still, even at 300 pounds, I could still dunk. Early, my first couple, 3 years or so. But, you know, you start getting into, at that point, 6 or 7 knee surgeries in, I could still dunk. But when you start getting to 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and then 20, yeah, then you can't dunk anymore.
Why after one knee surgery were you like, I need to dunk? I know I don't play basketball, right, but I need to dunk.
Well, because we used to have this racquetball court with a hoop in it when I played for the Skins.
Okay.
And there's a couple of guys, we would play some hoop games every now and again down there, but and which in you think about this little tiny racquetball court with a bunch of football, like
big
a bunch of dudes,
players,
right?
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of room, but there was a couple of dudes that we would play horse with. And one guy in particular, I'm going to use his name because he'll deny it and he's a liar. But Clarence Vaughn.
Clarence Vaughn, this one's on you.
Clarence Vaughn. I don't know if he was down in the Springs for a while.
Stink's going to dunk on you again.
So Clarence Vaughn was, we were playing horse and, you know, and he's like all whatever. You know, talking all that smack and stuff. And for the HORSE, I threw down a dunk and he had and he missed. And so I beat him in horse on a dunk at, you know, me 295 or 300 and him, he's a little defensive back. He was a safety. And it was like for him, it's the most, like that's why he denies it to this day. He won't admit it. He will not admit it.
So did you save it up? Did he know that you could dunk going into it?
I don't.
Because you got to know a guy when you play horse.
Right.
You kind of got to know, okay, he's going to try this.
Yeah, I don't think he believed. Like, I told him I could, but I don't think he bought it.
Wow.
I don't think he bought it. And then I did it. And then it wasn't that he couldn't dunk. He just missed it because I think he was in total shock. And so, but he won't admit to this day. I bumped into him at Redskin reunion and he would admit it.
Wow.
Liar.
All right.
Love you, Clarence.
Clarence
but
Vaughn.
But I dunked on you.
That one's for you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So this, training camp 2019 Road to Redemption is 2 days away. We're counting down the biggest questions as voted on by the fan host. Today's question we'll discuss next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to eFirstBank.com/business for more details.
Well, our biggest question for training camp with Training Camp 2019 Road to Redemption. 2 days away, we're counting down the biggest question as voted on by the fan hosts. Today's question is, will Emmanuel Sanders be healthy? So we've seen some videos. Hell, Stink, I've stood as close as you and I are right now and watched Emmanuel Sanders run and cut at minicamp and OTAs. He looks awesome. But will he be football healthy, ready to go?
Right.
At some point in training camp?
I would imagine. I mean, the only way you get football healthy is to play football, right? So he's got to be able to do that. Against, you know, coverage, against DBs leaning on him, against DBs redirecting him, against DBs in press trying to jam him. You know, you've got to be able to do all those things that way. So we'll see that. And that's just work in progress. I mean, you just have to go through it, right? You can't train to do those things in the, at least not at, you
not
know,
in the
facilities.
Phase,
yeah,
right?
In the recovery phase and not at the facilities anymore because then you get turned in, you know? Now, if you wanted to do it off site, right, I suppose you could do it off site on your own team, but nobody wants to risk getting injured off site, you know? So, listen, the thing, I think he's going to be ready. It's just going to take a little bit of time and getting used to, you know, getting used to doing those things. The other thing is, how do you respond? I think that's because I've heard him say, yeah, I'm a little, like when he was on with DMAC, you know, it's like you get up in the morning and it's stiff, but once I get loosened up and stuff, I'm fine.
That was the second time with DMAC, right? The kumbaya thing.
Right. So, exactly. So how does that work? How does that work once you start leaning? Like, is there more soreness? Does it take more time to recover? Like, just questions that can only be answered by doing it.
You know what sends a shudder down my spine?
What's that?
Thinking about this wide receiver group this year without Emmanuel Sanders.
Oh, yeah. You'd be in trouble.
Because now Deshaun Hamilton, who's a fine young player in his own right, now he's your number two. And then, what, Timmy Patz at three, Juwan Winfrey at three, like all of a sudden, without Emmanuel Sanders, this wide receiver core has a lot of question marks.
Tons. Even with Emmanuel, until he proves that he's healthy and can do it.
Right.
But I think Emmanuel, I think he's a really good player. He does a lot of things well. And the other thing is, man, that dude takes hits. That dude, he always bounces up. He's got toughness to him, you know? So, like, he doesn't, that part doesn't scare me about him. It's just a matter of how you respond and how that Achilles responds and all those things. But he just looks like he's super, like, super fast. I'm gonna get off of Emmanuel for a second and the receivers, because I want to ask you a question. You know, we talk about the biggest questions of training camp. And this whole draft process lined up to get the kid from Michigan. What was it? Devin Bush. Devin Bush.
Mm-hmm.
It lined up, and you see how Fangio played this defense last year in Chicago with Roquan Smith and with, you know, and with Danny Trevathan in the middle, and how many times that they were able just to sit in base defense and play nickel looks and, you know, and sub package looks. And you look at our linebacking core with Josie Jewell, with Todd Davis. And I'm not saying that those guys aren't good players. I think they're both good players, but they're not Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan.
No.
And so, like, are we not giving enough? Are we not, because we talk about injuries and we tend to, you know, it's just tend to, fantasy football world that we live in, we tend to focus on the offensive side of the ball. Are we not asking enough questions? Like, people just assume it's going to be elite level defense. Can it be an elite level defense if you don't get an elite level play from your middle linebacker position?
Well, and Noah Fant can be a Pro Bowler eventually, not this year, but eventually Noah Fant can do that. Devin Bush could be a Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Bush could be Leighton Vander Esch. Like, immediate impact. And Vander Esch, you know, it's way right. too soon to be calling him that, but that's, if we end game this thing, like, look at the end in a decade and we're going to look back on not taking Devin Bush, it might be a gargantuan mistake if they want mm-hmm. to stay in base as much as they did with Chicago. I don't think they're going to be able to do that.
I don't think they are either. And Devin Bush is a guy that when you watch him at Michigan, you talk about a dude that can run. Yeah, you know, I mean, there were like anybody, any young player, you know, there were bad reads and there were some things, missteps and things of that nature. But you look at a guy like that who can flat out run, and his ability to tackle in space, like when he's running up and he's got, you know, he's kind of a curl flat defender and they dump one off to a back and he runs up in the flat and just sticks a dude for a 2 yard gain. You know, I mean, like he has got that kind of athleticism about him that he would have been, you know, like an instant. He feels to me like an instant impact player.
Was London Fletcher a teammate of yours? I'm just trying to put the math together.
No. I played against London Fletcher, but we were never, when he was with the Rams, I played against him.
Okay.
When I was here in Denver.
That's who Devin Bush is to me.
Right.
So I'll ask you the question right back. Okay. If I told you, you passed on London Fletcher.
Right.
You got a tight end that can be pretty good, but you passed on London Fletcher. How do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Especially knowing you have Todd Davis and Josie Jewell.
Right. See, London Fletcher's a great, great player. I even think that Devin Bush is a more physical form of London Fletcher.
Well, that doesn't make the problem any better.
Right, no. So, you know, again, I think there's a couple of different factors here. I said earlier in the show that don't listen to the team, watch what they do from a front office standpoint.
Yeah.
Don't listen to them, watch them. And then, because, you know, I mean, part of your job as a GM or part of your job as a representative of the team is to lie. That's, you know, or to stretch the truth or just not to give you the whole story. but that's every team. I'm not bagging on John or that's their job. And I get that. And it's what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to protect your team. When you trade from 10 to 20, you're not only trading down to address a need at the tight end position, which they've drastically needed over the last few years and haven't had one. But you're also picking up, you know, a second round pick in which you've bettered your roster, right, with a Drew Lock. So you know, in the end, it just can't be, look at what Devin Bush did and look at what Noah Fant did. You know, now you're talking about, Was it Locke you got with that pick, or was it Dalton Reisner that you got with
it? It was Locke.
It was Locke you got with that pick. But now you gotta weigh both of those things. You gotta look at, you know, what Drew Locke eventually becomes and all that kind of stuff. So, like, it's just not as easy as one for one. And what it tells you about the Broncos is it tells you that, hey guys, like, we need to be better with our roster. Like, we depleted our roster with some really bad drafts and some bad choices in free agency, and now we've got to continue to build our roster.
Well, and this depletion comes from a couple of previous picks. One of those picks still on the team, one up with your buddy in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
It comes back to missing on Paxton, and it comes back to if Jake Butt was ever healthy, they wouldn't need a tight end of the first round.
Right.
That's how good Jake Butt is. Jake Butt. And I know he's taken issue with D-Mac, although I think it was really what I said anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, if Jake Butt's healthy, he's an awesome player. He's got great upside. I don't know how a guy can stay healthy after three major knee injuries at the tight end position.
Right.
In his football career.
There's only two guys that I've ever known to have that kind of knee problem and come back and have really productive careers. Thomas Davis, freak show.
Yeah.
And you remember Terry Allen, running back in the day?
Of course, yeah, Clemson.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the only guys that I've known.
Terry Allen would shred his knee, run for 1,000 yards, shred his knee, miss a year, come back, run for 1,000 yards, shred his knee, miss a year, come back, run for 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I think he had three ACLs and Thomas Davis had three ACLs.
Yeah.
And both are, you know, were Pro Bowl players. So hopefully that's the way it goes with Jake Butt.
Okay. Well, speaking of coming back from injury, is Philip Lindsay getting ahead of himself? And why Von Miller needs to follow Stink's advice? That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
In my mind, I'm ready. You know what I mean? 100%. So, and that's how you say, you know, once camp hits and y'all see me, y'all hear, y'all know what I'm going to be doing. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know, you just got two more days, you know? It's a present. So, you know, you guys get to see you in two more days.
It is a present. It's a great present. Every single year. It's like Christmas in July.
Yes.
It's training camp 2019, Road to Redemption will be there starting Thursday. That was Philip Lindsay, audio provided by our good friend Troy Rank, Denver 7 Broncos insider. Philip Lindsay saying in his mind he's 100%. Well, what does the team think about that? And will we see Lindsay be a full participant from the jump, from day one?
I doubt that we'll see him be completely full participant. I think they'll ease him into, practice. They'll give him, you know, individual and some other things that he can do without, you know, risking injury. I think, you know, they'll keep him out of some of the teams, some of the big contact drills, but I think they'll work him into that. Excuse me. Had a sneeze there. Oof. But I think they'll work him into that. So, I think that's, you know, that's part of the process that you go through as an injured player coming back off an off season. So, I'm excited about Philip Lindsay. I'm excited to see how they work this backfield. I'm really excited to see how Jano, takes on the role of fullback in this offense. It'll be a little bit different than, you know, what it's been in the past.
You talk about changing roles, and usually we bring that up with Philip Lindsay, like maybe he's going to catch some more passes. Maybe, you know, Royce Freeman will lead the team in carries, but Philip Lindsay will have the most all-purpose yards. But with Jano, is this a full use check conversion? Mm-hmm. Meaning, use check played 662 snaps last year. Jano played like 230.
Right.
So is this a full use check conversion? We're just playing 600 snaps, or is this, yeah, I'll play like 300 snaps.
Right,
on
yeah, I think it's a little bit, like, split the difference.
It's like half Eddie.
Right, yeah. I think there's a couple things here. Like, Juszczyk is not a trained killer. Right? Juszczyk is not your dig dudes out of the hole, take on linebacker. I mean, he'll do it.
He's not Anpipe.
Right, he's a willing participant, but he is not absolutely pile driving guys. So, you know, the question mark for me is how will Jano be motioning out, getting outside the numbers, you know, motioning across the formation, running the routes that Juszczyk runs. Because as they call him there in San Francisco, Juice, that dude, he was a Harvard tight end that they converted to fullback, but he's got unbelievable receiving skills. So somewhere between the two, because Jano at fullback is a train killer. I mean, that dude will shorten your neck. And so it'll be interesting to see how much of the passing game, like how good he is at that. Cause I don't think we've really got to see we haven't got to see him so much in that role and, you know, I'm not sure exactly what he would be in that role.
I've seen him try to catch some passes out at minicamp and OTAs, and like he's a good receiver in terms of not letting it into his body.
Uh-huh.
But Stink, you'll appreciate this. I think Jano's upper body is so large, like it's difficult for him to get his arms up to catch.
He may have to change. You know, he may have to change the pads he wears. He may have to go from the kind of the little bit thicker, you know, fullback ramrod into a little bit sleeker design to help him have that, you know, to help him be able to get his arms over his head and do all those things. But it'll be that will be interesting. But you'll see, you know, you'll see a ton of two back formations, a ton of two tight formations. You know, you just see a lot of those personnel groupings, in this offense. So, you know, we always say like 11 personnel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is one back, one tight end, you know.
Three wide receivers. That's
right?
If you're talking about the Los Angeles Rams. That's almost all you talk about,
yeah,
is 11 personnel.
Yeah, that's pretty much everything, you know, everything that the Rams run.
This is a 12 or 22 personnel team.
Right.
They're two tight ends as much as you possibly can.
They will be in two tight ends quite a bit. Cause that's, I mean, ultimately that's, you know, one of the things they run. But when you start talking about personnel groupings in the West Coast offense, so base, so fullback and a halfback, right? X and a Z, two wide receivers and a tight end. So two backs, one tight end.
That's 21.
21, mm-hmm. which is base. Then you get into Tiger. So Tiger is a Y and a U. So two tight ends, right? Two wide receivers, one running back. That's Tiger. So now if you want to flip it over to...
Tiger's 12.
Tiger would be 12. Correct. Exactly. Then you want to get into, let's call it Zebra. That's three wides, one back, one tight end. That's 11 personnel, right? Then you want to get into U. Okay, U would be one tight end or two tight ends, a Y and a U in West Coast, and then a fullback and a halfback, and that would be that, and then one wide receiver. So that would be 22 personnel.
Right.
So, and this is how, and then Eagle is one back and four wides, no tight ends. That's Eagle. So these are West Coast, like these are West Coast, you want to get into Y. Y would be three tight ends. And two backs, no wide receivers. So that's how the West Coast personnel is kind of described.
I bet they don't go Eagle that often.
No.
Now, is it you, like the animal you, because you got Tiger, Zebra, Eagle, it's, or is it you, like Y-O-U?
Like
I'm
you.
Confused.
Just like a U.
Oh, just the letter U. I thought it was like E-W-E.
E-W-E. No, that wasn't like a sheep, right? So it was just a U.
Okay.
Which again is just the way back in Bill Walsh's, you know, back when he was putting all this system together, that's how he labeled the positions.
Right.
So.
And every offense is different. Years ago, Peyton Manning quizzed me at a press conference when I was talking about 12 personnel. He's like, what is that? And I said, well, it's one back and two tight ends. He goes, well, I call that Dallas.
Right.
So it's different for every offense.
Everybody is different in the way they describe it. But in their minds, like, you know, if you say, hey, Tiger, you know, you know that you're in two tights with one back and you know which the two tight ends are and you know who your kind of like your U guy is and your tight end is. And so, you know, there's like when I was in Washington, we were a one back team. We're a three wides one back team. But you know, we would
get three great wide receivers. That's
right.
Why.
Yeah. But we would, you know, we'd use a lot of two tight formations, one back, two tights, but we didn't carry a fullback. So, well, we did. He was a special teams, but he didn't play. We carried a fullback, but he didn't ever play. We used our tight ends as fullbacks. So we would call them Y and H. And the H would be the movement guy that would also be kind of the fullback guy. So if we need to motion a guy from inside to out and run an ISO, then, you know, we would have either Terry Orr or Ron Middleton would motion across the formation and he'd be the lead blocker in our ISO game.
So you had some advice for Jano in terms of trimming down the pads. What advice can you give Von Miller? Because the Madden rankings are out. Von is not a 99. As you were Madden,
mm-hmm.
Just a, you know, kind of a send off here, final send off. Von Miller, some tips.
Hey, 97 is good, Von. I mean, it's an adorable little rating. Yeah, it is. Keep working hard. Set your goals high. I mean, on Thursday at camp, just take one look at me and then set your goals high. You know, raise the bar. Maybe you get to a 99. Who knows?
Sound like Casey Kasem.
Yeah.
Keep reaching for the stars. Good on you, kid. 97's good, Vaughn. That's a wrap for today's program. He's Mark Schlereth. I'm Cecil Lammy. Many thanks to DeHuff, Behind the Glass, and Millennial Band, the man.
I want to win.
I'm Cecil Lammy saying, Safety Blitz coming up next. Stay tuned and stay frosty.